So, imagine a massive, like, nationwide housing startup, but your venture capitalist isn't Silicon Valley. It's actually the South African government.
Right. And instead of just, chasing a financial profit, they are demanding these really strict social dividends.
Exactly. So welcome to today's deep dive for you, our listeners. Our blueprint today is South Africa's 2007 social housing bill. We're on a mission to explore how a government, basically legally, architects a system that balances a constitutional human right with, some seriously strict bureaucratic oversight.
Yeah, it's a fascinating setup because to really understand the mechanics of this bill, you have to look at the end user. I mean, this isn't just some blanket housing
Like,
policy.
that's much more targeted than that.
It is. It explicitly targets low to medium income households, and it prioritizes highly vulnerable demographics. So we're talking women, children, the disabled, the elderly, and notably individuals affected by HIV and AIDS.
Wow, okay. But I mean, if the goal is to stabilize those specific vulnerable populations, just dropping cheap housing on the outskirts of town doesn't really solve the problem, does it?
No, not at all, because they need access to healthcare, jobs, and, actual infrastructure.
Wait, you can't just isolate them.
Exactly, which is why the bill created what they call restructuring zones. It legally mandates that social housing projects have to be built within these designated areas, so near economic hubs and transport lines.
Oh, I see. So it sounds like this isn't just about putting roofs over heads, but actively trying to, like, re-engineer city layouts.
That's spot on. It forces medium to high density designs to really maximize land use. The government is actively trying to weave opportunity directly into the city's fabric.
That's a huge vision. But executing something that vast, how does the government do that without just stepping on its own toes?
Well, it takes serious coordination. The bill strictly divides the labor across three spheres of government, so national, provincial, and municipal.
Okay, so national sets the rules and provides the main budget, right? And they officially designate those restructuring zones.
Right, but then the provincial government is inserted as a sort of middleman. They allocate the capital grants, ensure fairness, and mediate conflicts.
Wait, why a middleman, though? If National is providing the money, wouldn't they want direct control over the builders?
You'd think so, but the province acts as a necessary buffer against localized political friction because the municipalities, the local government, they do the groundwork. They provide access to physical land, existing buildings, and municipal infrastructure.
Ah, okay. And I imagine they have their own local agendas.
Always. They often have competing local interests. So the province ensures that the national mandate doesn't just get completely derailed by local municipal politics.
I love this. So it's kind of like a restaurant franchise. National writes the menu and provides the funding. Provincial manages the regional supply chain. And the municipality is the physical kitchen doing the actual cooking.
That is a perfect analogy. But, that franchise model only functions if there is a mechanism to handle a failing kitchen.
Right. Like, what happens when the kitchen mismanages the funds?
Well, the bill anticipates that exact failure. It establishes the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, or the SHRA, as the ultimate watchdog.
Okay, and what kind of teeth does this watchdog have?
Serious teeth. They accredit the social housing institutions, the private companies or co-ops that actually manage the housing. And if one of those institutions falls into maladministration, the SHRA has really extreme powers.
Extreme, like, big fines.
Bigger. They can order forensic audits, apply to the High Court to suspend the board, or even completely take over the institution and transfer its buildings to a new operator.
Wait, really? How does a government regulator just physically seize a private co-op's building without violating property rights? That sounds like a legal minefield.
It does, but it works because of the strict legal strings attached to the initial capital grants.
Oh, so it's baked into the agreement.
Exactly. When an institution accepts state funding to build or acquire these properties, they agree to this heavily regulated framework. If they mismanage the funds, the SHRA doesn't just walk in and change the locks, they apply to the High Court.
Which makes sense. You have to protect massive public investments.
Right. Because we're dealing with securing a constitutional right, the housing itself has to be shielded from boardroom failures. The tenants cannot be left homeless just because the management company went bankrupt.
That's so crucial. So for you listening, whether you're looking at corporate structures or public policy, this document is really a masterclass in designing accountability from the ground up.
It really is. It's a complex attempt to bridge the gap between a constitutional right to housing and the harsh realities of financial management.
Using, a strict hierarchy and a highly empowered regulator. But it does leave one final kind of provocative thought. to ponder.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if heavy-handed regulation is the government's method to ensure sustainability, at what point does that strict oversight actually scare away the private sector delivery agents the bill is trying to attract?
That's the real tension. If our venture capitalist is too controlling, who is going to want to take their money?
Exactly. Definitely something for you to think about the next time you see a new apartment building going up.